No, I'm not asking you to take off your glasses and clean them. But think about that. How do you see? How do you see? Obviously, we're not talking about our eyesight or how we view things with our physical eyes, but how we perceive things or how we come to the conclusion about how we should act or behave or even live. How do you see? I would invite you to open up your Bibles to the book of 1 Peter chapter 4. I think this was an important question that obviously was not written as a narrative in this letter, but it was certainly on the minds of many Christians as Peter wrote this letter, as they received it and as they read it. How do I see myself in this life? How do I see myself in my community? How do I see myself among others? Because people see us, and people make observations about us and conclusions about us, and sometimes they're unwarranted or unfair. But how do we view ourselves? That's especially important for those who are Christians, those who've been called out of the world to be different. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1, since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. Peter says this is our most sacred duty. As those who are Christians, as we have gotten to a point in our lives where we have not allowed Satan and temptations to overtake us, that needs to be a priority as we're developing our faith and as we're growing, that we need to be able to overcome the power and the influence of sin working in our lives. That's not to say, of course, that no one will ever make a mistake, but it means that we should be determined to be the kinds of people who show and who reflect that they have been changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that we certainly are striving to be different from the world. Not that we're trying to elevate ourselves above everybody in the world, but just as Brother Chris prayed in his prayer, that we can be a shining light to a divided nation, to a divided world, to a divided home, to a divided friendship, and you can go on and on and on. But there are two ways in which the world is going. There is one direction in which we are going towards the will of God, and there's another direction in which we're going wherever we want to go, right? And so the question is, in the midst of all of these things going on in life, how do we see ourselves? Do we actually see ourselves as truly devoted people of God? Do we see ourselves as individuals who have truly been redeemed and changed and transformed? Not because we've gone through a physical process of obedience to God's commandments. I've come and I've been baptized into Christ, and everybody has witnessed that. And so, therefore, I consider myself a born-again Christian, as some people would say. Or is it broader than that? Not that it excludes that. That's part of it. But do we see ourselves as people who truly love God? Do we see ourselves as people who are truly devoted to the cause of the cross, who are trying to change their lives each day, who are trying to be an example to others, not so that attention can be drawn to ourselves, but so that attention can be drawn to God? Do we see ourselves as servants of God who are trying to reach lost souls, whether it be by word of mouth or whether it be just by our actions, again, as Brother Chris prayed in his prayer? Do we see ourselves as individuals whose duty it is to be a light to everybody around us? Or do we see ourselves as individuals who really just care about themselves? And, you know, if somebody chooses to obey God, that's good. If they don't, well, that's just on them. How do we see ourselves as recipients of this grace of God, as recipients of this hidden knowledge that God has revealed to us now through the preaching of the gospel, as Paul would write about to the church at Ephesus in chapter 3? Paul saw himself as a debtor. Remember in Romans chapter 1, I am debtor to the wise, to the unwise, to the Jews, to Greeks, to barbarians. Remember that? So as much as is in me, I am ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome, because I am not ashamed. That's how Paul saw himself. So Peter writes in verse 2, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. Is that how I see my life? Or do I just simply have a worldly or a physical routine that I go through every week? It really doesn't involve, growing spiritually or being involved in the kingdom life. Now, verse 3 says, for the time that is past suffices for doing the Gentiles or for doing what the Gentiles want to do. Peter's essentially saying we've had enough fun, right? We've done all the things that we've needed to do in this physical life. Now it's time to put that aside, right? He says, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery. What happened to you? Well, it's the power of the gospel. People should be able to see you and to see me and recognize not that we're just religious people, but that we are devoted to Christ. How do we see ourselves? Right. It's a very simple lesson, and I hope that you'll take some notes and add to it on yourself. But how do you see your time? Think about that. For some people, time is very precious. Especially if you're very busy and you have a lot of responsibilities and a lot of obligations. Time is not something that you waste, right? Time is something that for the most part, can cause you either financial success or occupational success or failure. And the same thing can be said for life in general. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3. The writer of Ecclesiastes, who is probably Solomon, makes this point that there is a time for everything under the sun, right? And of course, he just kind of throws things out there at random to give us a general idea of what he's talking about. For everything, there is a season, and for a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to tear, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time for war, and a time for peace. But you know, there are those who go through life who really don't respect time. And it may be individuals who probably don't have a job, or it may be individuals who are retired, or it may be individuals who just look at life from a carefree perspective, and they just kind of just take what life throws at them, and they just kind of attack the day as they see it comes to them. They don't really have any kind of priorities. They don't really have any kind of a plan in life. Maybe you're surprised because they're able to go about and fulfill most of their obligations. But the attitude persists that really I don't plan anything. I just kind of take life as it goes. And sadly, for some, that carries over into their spiritual life, too. I don't really plan to study anything. I don't really plan to do this or that for the Lord. If an opportunity presents itself, then I just jump on it. We know, of course, Scripture speaks out against that kind of a mindset, especially spiritually. But how do we view our time? You know, are we controlled by time, or do we have a handle on it? Are we using our time wisely? Are we recognizing circumstances like these that we see in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8? And, of course, through wisdom and through knowledge and through preparation and through prayer, we are able and ready to address these circumstances in life and to represent the gospel well. Are we pressed for time? You know, some people are like that. Some people just, they don't really plan anything like we said before, and they just kind of press for time, or sometimes they're just too busy. But when we don't plan things out, when we don't have a schedule, we just kind of take things as they go. We're running around everywhere like a chicken with his head cut off. Sometimes it feels like that, doesn't it? But then there are those who just operate that way all the time. And the problem with that is that spiritually speaking, we are neglecting several opportunities, aren't we? Because we're just too busy. I don't think anybody would want to stand before the Lord and say, I was just too busy. I threw all these opportunities at you. You had the opportunity to study with this person, talk to this person, to console this person, to encourage this person. Why didn't you do it? I just didn't have time, Lord. I think we can all imagine what the Lord may say to us. Well, now you have all the time you need to think about that. And of course, it would be too late to make changes. Do you dwell mostly on the past, the present, or the future? Think about that. I'm sure most of us know a lot of people who dwell on the past all the time. They dream about what could have been. And as they remain in the past, they fail to move forward to accomplish those things that God, of course, would have them to do. Or do we look to the future? Do we look to opportunities to share the gospel? Do we look for opportunities to grow? Do we look for opportunities to make ourselves better? That's something to think about. Because the truth of the matter is, some of us, we're just so busy that we don't have the time to think about our time. You ever go through life and look at your watch and say, my goodness, I didn't know it was that time. We've all done that, right? Sometimes we do that spiritually too. I don't know, time for services, you know. Or my goodness, I've been watching so many shows on TV. I've been binging so much, I didn't know it was this time. I got to go to bed and I've got services tomorrow. I don't have my clothes ready. I don't have my lesson ready. We get so caught up in this life that we don't respect the time that God has given to us, and we fail to realize how precious time really is. It's almost as if we live in this world as if we do have all the time in the world, but we really don't. Frank and I were just kind of teasing about this before study started, but we don't know when the Lord's coming, do we? We don't know what time or what hour or what year or what day he's coming. All we know is that when he comes, Christian or not, we will be surprised. It could be a good surprise or it could be a bad surprise. Right. How do you see your time? Is it something that is to be used in a frivolous manner? Or is it something that is precious to you? Right? How do you see people? How do you see people? Right? Actually, before I jump on that, I failed to read verses 9 and 13, didn't I, in Ecclesiastes. So before we go to Proverbs 18, or before we read that, let's finish Ecclesiastes 3, 9 to 13, because there are some important things that are mentioned here that we need to consider as far as time as well. But Solomon says, what gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time, or some versions say he's made everything appropriate in its time. Everything is a mystery. He starts off by writing in chapter 1. But yet, when we look at it all, it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. It shows the, the knowledge and the wisdom of God in all things. We recognize that there is a God who has set boundaries on us in this life. In verse 11, he says, also he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. We have an understanding that life continues after this physical world that we live in, that our time is limited, and that there is a time where things will carry on for all eternity. What are we doing with that time? That time comes, it would seem, very quickly, doesn't it? We can look back at our lives and we can say, where has the time gone? More importantly, what have we done with the time that was given to us? Verse 12, I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. In other words, enjoy what God has given to you. Spend your time wisely. And use it for the way in which God intended for it to be used. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in his toil, that is God's gift to man. Unfortunately, there are those who are making a lot of money. There are those who are moving up in positions, all at the expense of the joy and the love that God has intended for us to have. That's not to say that you can't make money. That's not to say that you can't advance yourself, occupationally speaking. But it is to say that sometimes we pursue those things that ultimately do not bring us the joy and the happiness or fill the void that God wants us to have in our life, because we don't see time as being something very precious. I tell you, one of the things that really, this is a personal peeve I have, and Alan could probably sympathize with it too, and probably JB, everybody who's been in the military, you don't waste time. Don't you hate it when you tell somebody, meet me over here at this time, and then you get there, and they don't have their shoes on, they don't have their socks on, maybe they're just getting out of bed? Well, I got time, right? I remember being in the military, if you showed up on time, you were late, right? But some people don't take the time that they have been given seriously. And unfortunately, the work of the Lord fails because of that. But Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24, how do we see people? A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Those are the kinds of friendships that we long for. That's the kind of social closeness and intimacy that we all desire to have, right? But how do we see people? I'll tell you how the Lord saw people. He saw souls, didn't he? He thought about eternity as he met individuals. The Lord met people who had different problems in life and different fears and worries and concerns. But the Lord didn't necessarily address all those things. He didn't try to satisfy everybody's wants or desires. He didn't try to make friends of every single person he came across at the expense of his own work or values. But sometimes we look at relationships and friendships, and they're so dear, they're so precious to us, they're so important to us that we are willing to do things that undermine what the gospel says. We are willing to, as the 2 John says in verse 9, go too far. And many, of course, have lost their relationship with the Lord as a result of that. Do we see souls? Do we see opportunities to teach the gospel? Do we see opportunities to teach and to inspire young people to think differently than some of the modern norms that are disgraceful in our society? Or are we just private? Everybody's just private. Don't say anything. Don't talk to this person. Don't try to influence this person, because if you do, you get in trouble, or you might get backlash or this or that. We've gotten to a point in our society where everybody is just so introverted now. And a lot of people are like that with their faith. But again, we need to perceive the way Jesus did. Jesus saw souls. Jesus saw opportunities. Are your family relationships satisfying, or are they strained? Think about that. There are some people who, because of pride, are willing to keep barriers going in their relationships, whether it be a husband and a wife, or whether it be a father who has strained a relationship between a child because he's too hard on his child, and they're willing to go months, even years, giving each other the cold shoulder. Or do we go back to the book of Genesis chapter 2, where it all began, where God saw that man, of course, it was not good for him to be alone. He'll make a helper suitable for him. And it wasn't just the woman that God provided for the man, but it was with the intentions of having a family and, of course, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Carry out the values and the work of God. We begin to see that, of course, people did not respect those things. Are your friendships meaningful or are they superficial? Do we have friends who, when we see their name show up on the phone, we say, oh boy, right? I'm sure everybody has done that before. Or are we willing to do something about that? And sometimes we get so caught up into ourselves, into our own feelings and how we want to deal with things or deal with people, that again, we fail to recognize that we should see ourselves as those who've been redeemed, who've been changed, and who should act differently from the world. We're not those who avoid problems or those who avoid people because we don't like them, but that we should strive to be like Christ in all things. You can keep sweeping things under the rug as long as you want to. And I've heard people say, well, that's just the way we deal things. But again, God gave us friendships. God gave us companionships. God gave us love relationships so that we can find joy and fulfillment. God gave us neighbors so that we can love one another more than we love ourselves. But that we can love each other the same and that we can, again, extend his values to others. This is important, that we see things the way that God does. Is your social life a pleasure or a burden? Think about that. These are things that we don't like to think about, or these are things that we like to hide, but again, you know, we must face them. Number three, how do you see things? How do you see things? What am I talking about? Well, are you the kind of person who, when they walk into the store, they got to have everything? A lot of people like that. You ever been to somebody's house and they have so many things? And you know and they know they don't need all those things. But they just hoard those things. And those things, of course, take over their lives. And they give all those their time to those things. And those things become hobbies. And, well, we don't have time to spend with the Lord because we're too busy, caught up in our things. First Timothy chapter 6, beginning in about verse 6, Paul would write to Timothy about this. But godliness and contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Are you saying I can't have a huge collection of stamps or model cars or whatever it is I like? No, I'm not saying that. But there is a strong potential to be tempted and to be pulled away and to be snared away from the Lord, right? Verse 10 says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves through with many pangs. Now I'm about to step on some toes, mine included too, because I love football. I love to talk about football, but many of us can tell you most of all the players on a football team, right? And there are a lot of people who can tell you the whole organization, the coaches, the general manager, and they can tell you about these people's lives and why they shouldn't have hired this guy to oversee this team and why they hire that offensive line coach. And if you look at his record, but we can't even say the 12 apostles. I don't know anything about Bartholomew or Thomas or Nathaniel. Who's that? But I can tell you about all these things over here in my shed. Have you seen my shed? Have you seen my collection? Tools? Have you seen this? How important are material things to you? Think about that. Do you pursue things that you don't really need? They just came out with a new iPhone. And in a few months, they're going to come out with another tablet, computer, and I want this and I want that model. Again, nothing wrong with wanting to have something new. But the question is, do we pursue those things because those things are so precious, so dear to us, that there begins to be a battle over our emotions and our love for the truth and for the gospel and for the kingdom? Verse 17, as for the rich in this present age, charge men not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good and to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Verse 20, O Timothy, guard the deposit entrusted to you. Don't fall into the same snares. Avoid irreverent babble, which is falsely called knowledge. Right? How do we view things? Do you feel unsatisfied until you've acquired things? There's some people like that. They're not happy until they have something. Right? Or are you filled with the joy and the love and the power of the gospel in your own life? Then finally, how do you see your spiritual life? How do you see your spiritual life? I didn't go to Luke 12, but I think we remember the story of the man who had the barns, and he didn't really think much about his spiritual life, did he? He was so concerned and wrapped up in the things that he had acquired in life, and got to build down my barns and build bigger ones, and he was so concerned and about physical things and pursued the things in life that brought him financial success, but brought him spiritual ruin. You remember what was said about him. God says, you fool, your soul will be required of you tonight. You know, it's imperative that we understand how real that is. You can say, well, that was almost 2,000 years ago that Jesus told that parable, and it's just as true today. That if we pursue things more so than we pursue a spiritual relationship with God, there could come a point in our life where our soul could be required of us quicker than we thought. I had an uncle, Uncle Ted, years ago. He became a Christian. He obeyed the gospel. Many of you know Brother Phil Robertson, who preaches up in Gainesville. I didn't think he'd be able to teach him anything because he just didn't care to live that kind of a lifestyle. But Phil got through to him, and baptized him, and he became a Christian. He was faithful for a while, but then he went back into the world, started pursuing physical things, and he went to the convenience store down in Miami one day to grab a six-pack of beer and some cigarettes and got into the car and had a stroke. Went into a coma, he never came out of it. And we don't know when our time is, and so it's important that we view life the way that God intended it to be viewed. It is temporary, and it is to be lived for his glory. But how do you see your spiritual life? Look at Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. Doesn't say he's curious. Doesn't say he's intrigued. But he delights in the law of the Lord. And on his law, he meditates day and night. And notice, I want us to look at verse 3 very clearly, because I want us to ask ourselves the question, is this how we see our relationship with God? He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season. and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. I tell you what's shocking in this narrative here. Look at verse 4. The wicked are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives away. He doesn't say, now, the person who delights in the law of the Lord, the person who's godly, the person who's trying to live for God, he's like this tree planted by the rivers of waters. And the person that's, he's not as devoted, but he's just kind of halfway there. There's no in between. Isn't that shocking? He's like a tree planted by the rivers of the waters. If he's not but like a tree planted by the rivers of the waters, he's like the chaff. And so this narrative forces us to ask ourselves the question, how do we see ourselves? Do we see ourselves as verse 3 or verse 4? That may be an uncomfortable position for some. Right? Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. The Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Indeed, God does know the way of the righteous, and he knows the way of the wicked. And we may be able to fool ourselves as human beings into thinking that, well, I see myself as a very successful person. And we may be able to fool others as well. Well, I see myself as a pretty strong Christian. I'm not as strong as some, but that's irrelevant. In fact, remember with the Apostle Paul or the church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. That he does not really regard how he views himself, but what matters is how God sees us. Hopefully, the way that we see our lives is the same way in which God views ours, and vice versa. But if you have taken a close look at your life and you don't like what you see, the wonderful thing is that that can change. And God has given us a way in which that can change for the better. But the question is, are we willing to see things his way? Consider that as we stand and as we sing the song that has been selected.